fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
The views expressed on Inside Scoop do not necessarily reflect those of the station owner, management, or staff of WAGE.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. I just got back from a couple days in my hometown in Tennessee. I was there for the Jewish holiday of Rosh Hashanah, and I was talking politics with my family. And I want to talk this hour about how we talk with family, friends, co-workers about politics. How do we get through to people? How do we get people to understand our view? And how do we understand other people's views? You know, when I was there talking with my family, I really didn't bring up politics, but they brought it up for me. They all know what I do. And so, of course, they were asking me all kinds of things, challenging me. And I'm proud to say that most of my family is they're Democrats, but we got a few that are Republicans. And it struck me, really, and I have a long post on my blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com describing it, but it struck me that some were arguing rationally and bringing up points and having a good discussion, but others, they were doing what I find too often occurs in our political discourse, and I have to say particularly from the Republican Party, and that is they were shouting out code words, things that really weren't argument at all. One cousin, as I was discussing with him about, you know, how the Clinton years were better than the Bush years and how we really don't want four more years of this, he kept saying, Monica Lewinsky, Monica Lewinsky. And I felt kind of like he felt this was my Achilles heel, if you will. All he has to do is say Monica Lewinsky a couple of times, and, you know, it doesn't matter that we have record poverty in America. It doesn't matter that George Bush has the single worst jobs record since the Great Depression. But just say Monica Lewinsky as if what Clinton did in the White House with her was somehow more important than the millions of Americans suffering than a crazy war in Iraq and things like that. And what I want to talk about this hour is how these big lies are working. We've heard again and again and again that Kerry's a flip-flopper, which is ridiculous because they always use to cite as this his support of authorization to go to war in Iraq, but not actually doing it the way the president did. And I don't think that issue is too complex. I don't think that Republicans are too simple or too stupid to understand the difference between authorizing a president to go to war, actually giving him permission to go to war as a threat to get Saddam Hussein to comply and to open up his land to inspectors, which of course he did, and actually going to war. I think many of us understand that the difference between saying, all right, you know, we know there's a bully right in the yard. Tell him to stop. And, yeah, you have my authority to hit him if you really, really have to, but it should only be a last resort. And then if our child goes out, runs out to the bully and just smacks him one, they haven't followed our plan. They haven't followed our permission, our authority. But Republicans keep repeating words like this, flip-flops, they say. And I guess my question for you is, how do you discuss with your friends, your family, your coworkers about the issues of the day? In my family, there's a lot of people that like to talk about politics, and I appreciate that. But it's amazing how people refuse to look at cold, hard facts. And that's really the subject of this hour. It's one thing, again, I mean, you know, if you support more arsenic in the water because you think the polluter should have higher profits, well, that's a reason to support George W. Bush. If you love assault weapons with grenade launchers, and you think that every American has a right under the Constitution to launch a grenade, then obviously you support Bush. You don't support Kerry. And if you do, I can't argue with you. I mean, if you really believe that every American has the right to a grenade launcher, then I can't argue with you. That's an issue of policy. You support Bush's policy. You don't support Kerry's policy. If the hurricanes don't concern you, if global warming doesn't concern you, if you think it's all fake, well, then again, you might want to vote for Bush. if you think that all abortion is murder and that all women who've had abortion should get the death penalty for that murder, again, then you'll want Bush to appoint Supreme Court justices. Maybe you like big oil companies. Maybe you work for one. And maybe you think that we don't have enough dependence on foreign oil. You really like Saudi Arabia. Maybe you're Saudi Arabian and you wish us to have more dependence on foreign oil. Again, these are real reasons to vote for George Bush. But those aren't the reasons that people give me. Those aren't the reasons people discuss. Again, one cousin just says Monica Lewinsky again and again and again. Others come up with some really amazing stuff. They say that, for example, that Kerry voted against certain defense systems. Now, that one's understandable. Zell Miller said it, and I guess they don't believe that Zell Miller would just sort of lie on the floor of the Republican convention. It is a lie, and again, all you have to do is go to my website, www.radioinsidescoop.com, and you can look and see the actual votes. You can see, in fact, that Kerry supported weapon systems that Dick Cheney did not support, that George H.W. Bush, George Sr., did not support. Kerry was careful about the price tag of weapon systems. He didn't want to run up the deficit because Kerry is a fiscal conservative. Again, maybe people just can't understand that the Democratic Party of the 1970s is not the Democratic Party of today. If you are a fiscal conservative today, you are a Democrat. And all you have to do is look at the figures. Bush talks about the fact that Kerry wants $2 trillion in new programs. All right. Bush, and again, just look it up, folks. I'm not making this stuff up. Bush wants at least $3 trillion just on his plans to erase Social Security, get rid of Social Security, to privatize it, and extension of his tax cuts. That's $3 trillion alone. That doesn't include any other government spending George Bush wants for Halliburton, for polluters, for companies that take jobs abroad, all the things that he supports. And so, you know, when talking with my family, I'd find that they said, well, okay, George Bush is the biggest government spender in post-war American history. True, he has given us the largest debts possible. True, he did not want to support our troops in Iraq if it meant that rich people had to pay for it. And then he flip-flopped and supported troops for Iraq as long as it went on the national debt. Talking about Bush here, Bush's flip-flop here. And they said, but you know what? I think in a second term, he will become a fiscal conservative. You know, I asked them this. And you know, usually they have to admit it's sheer hope. But I guess my question is, when we see ads on TV, how do you know who to believe? Do you look up independent fact-checking? Do you check the record for yourself? Or do you just trust whatever you read? Whatever you see on TV. And I got to tell you, with the press increasingly being concentrated in very few sources, well, it raises the question of, you know, what do we know? How is it that we can trust what we read? And why is it that the Republicans aren't focusing so much on the facts of the various programs? They're not focusing on how much money something costs or what Kerry's health care plan is. Again, Bush claims it's a government-run health care, but it's not. Kerry's plan, hello, is not for government-run health care. It's for giving businesses incentives to provide health care. You may like it, you may not, but the Republicans are repeatedly lying about what Kerry plans to do. And what's amazing is that people are actually believing what Bush says about what Kerry plans to do, rather than listening to John Kerry himself, rather than going to his website at www.johnkerry.com. So my question for you, and I would like to hear a lot of you calling in and help me with this question, is how do you talk with your coworkers? How do you talk with your family? How do you talk with your friends about politics? Some of you, you know, probably avoid the subject because we love our family, at least most of them, right? We like our friends, we wouldn't have them. And, of course, we got to keep working with our coworkers. So it's a very touchy subject. But what do you do if someone comes up to you and says, hey, you know, I'm voting for Bush because Kerry flip-flopped on authorization for our troops? And so you go to that coworker and you say, well, actually, Bush did not provide body armor to our troops originally. He forgot that. He didn't plan a lot of war planning because he thought the mission was accomplished back in May of last year. And so the troops themselves were asking their family to send them. They actually go to catalogs and send them body armor. The Democrats put it in a bill to provide that armor for the troops. And then, of course, the Republicans came around to support it. But Bush would only support it $67 billion for our troops, $20 million for Iraqi reconstruction. Bush only agreed to support it if we could make sure that poor and middle-class children and grandchildren paid for it. Right? I mean, that was the difference between Bush and Kerry on the $87 billion. Let me make that perfectly clear in case anyone doesn't understand it. The Kerry plan was to fund our troops, including the body armor that, oops, Bush forgot. And he was going to take $5,000 out of the tax cuts that people making over $400,000 got. Now, they got about $100,000 or so in tax cuts. If you're a millionaire, you got even more. They were going to take that $100,000 that the government was giving people that were making a lot of money every year and take $5,000 out of it. And that would be used to pay for the troops. Every other war in American history, we have used to pay. We have raised taxes, as we did in World War II, in Korea. The only one we didn't was Vietnam, and that led to a lousy economy afterwards. So that was the Kerry plan. Bush said this. He said, if you try to aid our troops on the backs of multimillionaires, I will veto the bill. That was Bush's words. He didn't use quite those words, but he said that he would veto the bill to aid the troops if it were paid for. He insisted that it not be paid for. Bush insisted that it be made as a debt so that future generations who already have the highest debt in American history would pay for it. And he said, I will not aid the troops. Bush was against the bill before he was for it. I will not aid the troops if you pay for it, Bush said. And then he flip-flopped, right, and agreed to aid the troops because it was paid for. Now, this Bush flip-flop gets no press attention. So my question for you, and I want you to call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can dial locally 703-777-1200 if you're listening in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. My question is, how do you talk with friends and family about politics, and what do you do when they throw up some fact at you that you know is false? Do you take them to the Internet? Do they even listen to you? Do they throw up their hands and say, I don't care about facts, I just want to state my position? How do you deal with it? Again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. Caller, you there? Caller? I'm not sure why we're not hearing this caller. Caller, last try here. You're on the air with Mark Levine. I'm afraid we have lost the caller. Caller, last try? Nope. All right, well, I hope you'll call back because it is an important topic, and I'm not sure why you weren't able to get through there. But keep trying. You will be able to get back in. So again, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. One of the things that people tend to mention when they're talking about, say, the war in Iraq is, I mean, I asked a simple question. Why are we there? And people are really, they have a hard time saying why they're there. The biggest thing they say today is democracy. They understand that the weapons of mass destruction argument, you know, doesn't buy anything. It's not true. And they understand, most of them, some of them, that there is no connection between Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda, though I still hear that. I still hear that lie. And you hear it from people like Dick Cheney. You know, Colin Powell is honest when he admits there's no link there. But not Dick Cheney. He keeps implying a link. Bush implies a link. So you hear these kinds of things, and people say, well, we're in Iraq for democracy. Wouldn't it be great, they say, following the president's words, wouldn't it be great if we had a democracy in the Middle East, in addition to Israel, which is a democracy, if we had an Arab democracy in the Middle East, and we could go in and install a democracy and have the people vote, and it would be just like Western Europe, and, you know, wouldn't that be wonderful? It would spread democracy across the globe. And it's funny to me because conservatives can often consider liberals as having pie-in-the-sky views, as having, you know, hopes and dreams that aren't realized. And they think that you can install democracy in Iraq and do it on the cheap, right? I mean, originally they said that Iraq's oil would pay for all of it. That's what Wolfowitz said, the Undersecretary of Defense before Congress. And, of course, that's not true. Then Dick Cheney said that they'd be greeted as liberators. We'd be greeted as liberators. They would throw flowers in our path, Dick Cheney said on Meet the Press. Tim Russert pressed him and said, well, sir, what if that's not the case? And Cheney assured him, no, that will be the case. A recent poll in Iraq shows that out of 100 Iraqis, 2% actually believe we are liberators. But the problem with this democracy argument, and I want you to think about this, and again, use it in your conversations with your friends, family, and coworkers, is that all over the globe, the Bush administration is helping dictatorships. And when I come back, I want to talk a little bit more about that. Talk about it in Saudi Arabia. Talk about how we're doing so little in Sudan. Talk about how we're letting the Taliban come back into power in Afghanistan. How we're letting terrorists take over again in Iraq. We are in Fallujah. But the biggest example that I see, and the most dangerous example, is occurring in Russia. For all the money, for all the amount of lives lost in Iraq, more than 1,000 dead, more than 7,000 wounded, hundreds of billions spent, we spent countless more money over several decades fighting the Cold War. Indeed, when Ronald Reagan died, Republican after Republican praised him as winning the Cold War. But historians, I think, will note that in 2004, Bush lost the renewed Cold War. When Russia returned step by step, inch by inch, to dictatorship, while George Bush continued to praise him as a man of vision, a man I admire. George Bush said of Putin, there's more democracy and freedom and rule of law there, as Putin is now ending elections for governors. Why are we praising Russia? Well, it's the same reason we bribed all these other little countries to be in our coalition. Russia is supposedly supporting us in Iraq, right? Partly they are, or we're trying to get more support. So we're not going to talk about the brutal crackdown in Chechnya. Because, well, the Chechens, many of them are terrorists. That's true. But that doesn't change what's going on in Russia. And most importantly, we are losing democracy in Russia. And Russia has nuclear weapons. Russia is far more dangerous than Iraq. Can you imagine if a Democrat were president and Russia went from a democracy back to a dictatorship again? We don't have to imagine what would happen. It happened in China in 1949, when Republicans accused Truman, Harry S. Truman, of losing China. Well, now we are losing Russia, and you hear nary a word from the Bush administration. When we come back, I want to talk about the different positions of Kerry and Bush on Russia and how different they are. And I do hope you'll call in and tell me, how do you talk to your family? How do you talk to your friends, your coworkers, about what's going on, about politics? What do you do when they continue to believe things you know to be untrue? It's a difficult question, and I need your help. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Here's a message about Anderson Windows from J.T. Hurst & Company, a division of T.W. Perry. If you're thinking about remodeling your home, keep in mind that windows play a big part, so it's important to get the right ones. Anderson not only offers finely crafted windows and patio doors in thousands of sizes and styles, they also give you natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and long-lasting energy-saving performance. Stop in and see the full line of Anderson Windows at J.T. Hurst & Company, a division of T.W. Perry. The pros at J.T. Hurst can locate a contractor to do the job for you or give you some helpful tips on how you can do it yourself. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first, a division of T.W. Perry. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg, Anderson Windows. Long live the home.
How many different organizations list you as a member? You might be a member of a sports team, a book club, travel, or CD club. But what does that membership really mean? Does membership in a book club allow you to vote on who runs the organization? Can you help shape the long-term future of your CD club? I don't think so. You can, however, shape the future of your electric company. That is, if you're a Novec customer. Novec, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, is owned by the consumers we serve and governed by a board of directors elected from the membership. Pretty cool, huh? But wait, there's more. Novec's customers share in the company's profits. Last year, we distributed more than $9.1 million in capital credits to our membership. The power to vote and a share of the profits. Membership doesn't get much better than this. Novec, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. Novec. I got the power to move ya.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And we're talking about how do you address friends and family about politics and coworkers. How do you discuss issues with them? And what do you do if they say something that you know to be untrue? Let's say they claim that Iraq had a role in 9/11. Or they say that Kerry flip-flopped on the war in Iraq. And you ask for specifics. You say, what do you mean? And he says, well, he says he voted for the $87 billion before he voted against it. In other words, they repeat the Republican spin lines. Do you have enough facts to go out and tell them what's going on? Or will they even listen? Will they even believe you? How do you address people who are more concerned by the false populism, if you will, of the Republican Party? Oh, liberals, Kerry likes to windsurf, and liberals drink lattes. When they are the party that's giving away poor and middle class taxes to rich people, how do you respond to them? Do you know what to say, and is there a way that you can address these things without getting in a big family argument? Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Are you talking to me?
I am.
Okay. My name is Dave, and I'm up in Northern California.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
Oh, very, very well, and I enjoy your program.
Thank you. Have you been talking with family? Do you have any family or friends or coworkers?
Well, yes, I wear Kerry buttons on my hat and such, and every once in a while some rude person points at, what are you doing voting for that? Why are you wearing that? You know, so the conversation often gets invited by somebody that's coming from a bit of a rude place, but I don't want to be as rude in return, but I say, well, one, because I'm not a greedy billionaire, because I don't believe that federal contracts should be awarded to special interests, you know, and our taxpayers overcharged like crazy. I don't like our government being run by corrupt special interests, because I think it's a good idea that we should try to save our middle class. You know, some people will think about what I'm saying, but most of them, they've already got it there. But Clinton lied under oath.
that's what I guess my question is. I mean, do people actually give you facts and figures? I mean, well, there was an interesting article in the Washington Post that I thought had it dead on, that Democrats argue with facts and figures. We argue detail after detail. We'll say 1.1 million jobs lost, or, you know, the poverty rate has gone up to the highest, a record high, or that we have a 21-year high of terrorist attacks. So if you want to know if we're safer or not, clearly we're not safer. Terrorist attacks keep increasing. But the Republicans, they don't deal with statistics. They don't deal with facts. They deal with emotion. And they say, Kerry's a flip-flopper. He's the most liberal in the Senate. He's, you know, Clinton, he's a liar, a perjurer, you know, not focusing on the dozens and dozens of Bush lies that we can just rattle off. Do you find that that's how people argue with you, Dave?
I do find that. I find particularly those that are hanging the toughest, you know, are being programmed unmercifully by the right-wing spin radio and TV to believe that it would be very unpatriotic, un-American, un-Christian to speak out anything against our wonderful president. That's the position. But I say, if we've got a president as corrupt as we have right now, I have an obligation to speak out against it.
Let me ask you this. Do they ever dispute your statistics? I was arguing with a cousin when I was home with my family, and he was talking about, you know, it's a good thing we got rid of Saddam Hussein. He was an awful dictator, and he killed lots of his own people. When I said, you know, to the 90s, and he had this saying, well, like, look on his face, and he didn't believe me. He literally didn't believe me. I mean, he knows this is what I do. I'm a radio host. And I said, you know, I'll take you to Google. I'll show you the pictures of Don Rumsfeld shaking Saddam Hussein's hand. He didn't want to know. And I guess my question for you, Dave, is have you had people where you give them a fact, and they just say it's not true, and they have no counterfact, they have no counterproof, they just say, I don't believe you, and I don't want to discuss it anymore?
Well, I think that's more often the case than that. I'm happy to report that I've had a few reasonably intelligent, objective people come around to hearing it and feeling that they couldn't any longer vote for Bush, but, you know, regretting it. But I know this, if Democrats ever had an administration as corrupt as this one, we would be bailing out of our party through the nearest window. We would never hang on with that kind of blind allegiance. I know of no Democrat that would.
Yeah, I don't think Democrats are big on blind allegiance. We tend to be fighting amongst ourselves. That's why I've been amazed and pleased by the incredible unifying nature of this. I mean, they're Democrats. Many think we never should have been in the war in Iraq in the first place, and many regret Kerry's vote to authorize the war.
I find almost all the Republicans that I speak to see that we are there somehow on a noble purpose, that Iraq invaded our country and we're defending ourselves. They seem to believe almost something goes on. Is the war being fought in the United States? I have to ask, you know, or did we invade Iraq?
Well, and according to United Nations Charter, unfortunately, we have broken international law in our preemptive strike on Iraq. But I guess my question that I'm trying to work out is, when you have a fact and someone is not willing to listen to that fact, how do you address them? What's the best? I mean, you can make a snide comment. You can just look at them wide-eyed. How do you address people that, for example, believe? 60% of Americans, one poll showed, I think it's gone down since this poll, believe there was actually, Saddam Hussein actually was behind 9/11. Where even, you know, even Powell, Colin Powell has admitted, no, Saddam Hussein wasn't behind 9/11. And Bush, when you push him, it says that it wasn't. But then he does this whole convention where they show September 11th, and people think that somehow the war in Iraq had something to do with the war on terrorism.
That's a very deliberate spin, because they're being programmed to do that. Whenever you speak of 9/11, include Iraq in that same paragraph. Whenever you speak of Iraq, include 9/11. So we're supposed to at least get the subliminal association, whether there's any evidence to support it or not. But that's deliberate. That's willful. That's con artists trying to sell us a bill of goods.
Well, the thing I find amazing is that it's actually working. And you know, I back until 2000, I've always been a firm believer in our Constitution. I believe the American, I used to believe, the American system worked, that it wasn't perfect, but it was better than any other system. And then came 2000, when, you know, the people of the United States and the people of Florida chose Gore to be president of the United States, and the Supreme Court said, you know, we're not going to let you count the votes. And that really radicalized me, and I realized that it doesn't matter if truth is on your side. It doesn't matter if you have all the facts. It doesn't matter if when you give people the details of the plans, without Kerry's and Bush's names on them, people overwhelmingly go for Kerry, because people use, the Republicans use these emotional issues, and I have to, and I hate to do it, but I have to go back to other examples in history, whether it be Joe McCarthy, whether it be, frankly, the fascists or the communists, also using emotion. Huey Long, a lot of the demagogues using emotion, using fake enemies, you know, rousing people up to a state where they're not thinking straight. And we can't always suspect people are going to look at facts. And we have to always be wary of this emotional pull.
I appreciate what you're doing, Mark. You know, they're going to try to do that again. It's obvious. They're fighting, getting verifiable voting machines.
Right. In fact, in Tampa, Florida, you may have heard, I don't know if you did, it's almost like they're doing a dry run for fraud. They, in one of the primaries, they managed to lose 245 votes that they just found in their electronic voting machines. And as you know, Dave, and I think most of my listeners know, Florida refuses to have a tamper-proof record for their votes. You could have a paper record. You could do that, make sure that no one can fraudulently change the electronics. But apparently they feel they may have to give it a little nudge just in case Bush loses Florida. And I have to say, I think Florida will again be the linchpin state here if it's at all a close election.
If any party that I was a part of, I saw them attempting stunts like that, that would be the last of me being in that party. You know, interesting, the polls of the rest of the world, which are not rigged polls, ours are, show that the rest of the world...
Some of ours are. The Gallup poll is particularly rigged right now because they have a higher ranking of Republicans and actually vote. But not all of our polls are rigged. But go
well,
ahead,
it's
Dave.
Not being rigged by the poll takers. What we have under our Patriot Act is federal tech goons that are able to invade any computer and change whatever they want. And that's what we're experiencing. Believe me, I know about that.
Yeah, actually, I do, too, because I used to work on the House Judiciary Committee. There's a program called Carnivore, in fact, that can go through and look through your emails and try to
find
things
that you're
doing.
Tell me about it. And that's exactly what they use. They go in and they want the poll to come out the way they want it to come out, and that's exactly what we're experiencing. We're not that much stupider than the rest of the world.
I'll tell you, though, I think the problem in the polls is a more systemic one, and I do want to get to another caller that's hanging on.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Dave. Let me just say on the polls before I get to my next caller, is that one of the things about polls is that how do they do them? They do them by calling landlines.
And as you know, we are changing in this country. We are having cell phones becoming more and more popular, particularly among young people. And if you look at statistics, you see that Kerry's support is overwhelming among young people. If you look at the 18 to 30-year-olds, Kerry is well over 54%, even at the height of the Bush bounce. He does worse among middle-aged and actually does better again among the elderly, who understand that Kerry won't take away their Social Security the way that Bush might. But young people, of course, many of them, I know many of them, many of my friends, have cell phones. They don't even have a landline. And now with this new internet phone system where you can actually use the internet to make long-distance phone calls, and that's, again, something more for the technologically savvy who tend to be Democrats, that also is not measured by polls. So I think that we really have to be very careful before we believe all the polls, all the hype. The other thing I think we should remember is that the state polls lag behind the national polls, and Kerry is very much in this race. Let me go to another caller. Caller, and again, if you want to call, though, real quick, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hi, Mark.
Yes.
Hi, this is Mike from L.A.
Hey, Mike from L.A. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Have you been talking with coworkers, family, friends?
I've been talking to a lot of people. And the parallel I'm going to draw, I mean, there's a very big, sensational trial going on out here, the Scott Peterson trial.
Yep.
Guy clearly killed his wife.
Yep.
And his family sits there in court every day and supports him blindly, and they've impoverished themselves supporting him. And damning new allegations come out day after day after day, and they have this bland, beatific smile on their face. And they say, we support our son. Our son didn't do this. And that's exactly the attitude. In the face of all evidence to the contrary, that is the attitude of Bush supporters.
Now, how
do not care.
Now, how do you, I mean, why do you think that is?
I think we have become so polarized in this country, so left and right polarized, that you can't. It's either all good. It's either black or white for a lot of people. Even intellectually discerning people, it's either a black or white situation. They cannot even admit to a chink in the armor of their side. It's an all or nothing. And I see it happening more and more in more areas of American society, but definitely in politics.
Do you find that you're ever confronting some people with facts where you say, look, all right, you say there's a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, but look at this, look at this, look at this. Look at the 9/11 report. Look at the Senate Intelligence Report. Look at the very words of Colin Powell, even George Bush, when he's pushed up against the wall. There absolutely is no cause to believe that Saddam Hussein had anything to do with 9/11, and they still say, well, I still believe it.
I can get people to admit to points 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, but they'll still say, yes, but I believe he's doing a good job and he's handling the situation properly, even though they have admitted to the incremental qualifications to that point of view. They still throw that out and just blandly say, no, he's doing a good job, I like him.
So I guess I have a problem with people that have hidden agendas. And it actually, one of my bloggers pointed out that he thought that some of my family might be against supporting Bush over Kerry because they think that Bush will be stronger on Israel. And in fact, if you go to my blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com, I give a long response on why I think actually they'll be pretty similar on Israel. But I think that actually the blogger had a point. There are definitely some in my family who will tell you outright they don't agree with Bush on the environment, they don't agree with Bush on health care, on abortion, on gun control, on, you know, prayer in school, on any of the domestic issues, certainly not on the economy, but they think that Bush might be better on Israel. Now, if they make that argument, that's at least one I can accept. All right, that's what you believe. Let's talk about Israel. Let's go into details. There are other people who are pro-life on abortion, and they don't, you know, they're never going to vote for a pro-choice candidate. They're always going to vote pro-life. That, at least, is a consistent position. But what I find is a lot of times people have hidden agendas, and even if the only reason they're voting for Bush is because they want more Christianity taught in our public schools, say, they will talk not about that, what they really care about, but they'll say, Kerry's a flip-flopper because he voted for the $87 billion before he opposed it. Or they'll say, I'm not sure about Kerry in Vietnam. Or all these things that are provably false to hide their hidden agenda.
Well, people don't want to be seen. Everyone wants to appear to be a statesman. Everyone wants to appear to be able to rise above their own petty, personal agendas. And I think that's part of it. I think everyone likes to appear, at the very least, to be objective. And so I think that's part of it, Mark. But, yeah, I've seen that as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I it's almost like you want to tick, all right, come here, look at the computer, here's Google. You know, one of the things that one of my cousins, and I don't mean to pick on my family out there, some of whom are listening in this program, and are welcome to call in and dispute me. If you do, they can use a false name, it's fine by me. It's not about names. But, you know, they talked about Kerry's being weak on defense. And I pointed out that actually Kerry had voted for these weapon systems that Zell Miller said he was against. He voted for them when Cheney opposed them, and that there was one authorization bill in 1990, and I want to let my listeners know this, where the Democrats had a plan and the Republicans had a plan, and they were different plans, and all the Democrats voted for their plan, and all the Republicans voted for their plan, very common in the Senate, and that one thing is what Zell Miller was citing, when actually, and actually on my, again, on my blog, there's a great Washington Post article that goes through and details these positions. But I try to explain, actually, no, Kerry was more hawkish on these particular weapon systems that Zell Miller cited. Zell Miller was just lying. And I got to look like, you know, that can't be right. Like, you wouldn't have a keynote speaker at a national convention tell something that's provably false. And, you know, I was like, well, you know, we can look at the votes, we can look at the website, and it's just this sort of will to disbelieve that I found surprising myself.
Well, Mark, part of it, though, I mean, you got to admit, part of it is our candidate. He is his own worst enemy, and he should be up there forcefully making these points that you're making.
Yeah.
You know,
you're right.
He almost lost me with his latest flip-flop, because he does flip-flop.
On which issue?
When he was given the opportunity, when asked if he would have done the same thing, knowing what he knows now that he knew then, in terms of going into Iraq, and he sat on the question for 2 days and then came out and meekly agreed with Bush.
Well, no, wait. But,
I was furious with him.
Yeah, but Mike, look, even that's been misused, okay? He has said that if he would have still voted for authorization to go to war.
Mark, that was his opportunity. People don't look for subtlety and shading, not in this election. Remember, George Bush doesn't do nuance.
That's true.
And Kerry, that was his springboard to come out and assert his position and be strong instead of being some double-talking mortician.
Well, what he said was he still would have voted for authorization, because when you threaten to go to war, that is what requires Saddam Hussein to let the inspectors in.
But then he talks to Bill Clinton 2 weeks later, and Bill talks him into, you know, taking a hard line against Iraq, and it makes him look exactly the way he's being portrayed as by the Bush administration.
But Mike, look, it's a huge. I mean, I guess one of the reasons I'm sympathetic to Kerry's position is because I admit it's largely my own. I also supported, and I got to tell you, the time the guy I was working for in Congress voted against authorization for the war in Iraq.
But you have voted for authorization?
Only no, because I should know better than to trust George Bush. And that maybe is the answer that Kerry should give.
Well, that's part of knowing now what you knew then, and
yeah,
that's something he should have pointed out.
I mean, what he said was he would have, and actually he did point out, and this hasn't been made very clear, but he did point out that he supported authorization for a president. He felt a president should have authority to go to war, but not this one, because this one messed it up. And again, I guess he could have made it more clear. But the idea that you're going to support an authorization to go to war as a last resort. Remember, at that time, Bush said that he was going to want the inspectors to go in. He was going to seek United Nations support. He said all of that in trying to get a vote from the Senate. And of course, the Democrats, their version of the bill didn't get on the floor, because Republicans got their version on the floor, which was this authorization.
Dealing with minutia. The voting populace doesn't have the patience for this. He had a golden opportunity to take a stand, and he blew it.
Well,
one of the reasons that the Republicans are getting away with what they're getting away with.
Okay, but Mike, all right, so you're in John Kerry's shoes. Voted for authorization in order to make Saddam Hussein comply with the UN resolutions, and then, of course, Hussein largely does comply and gets attacked anyway. How would you, if you were John Kerry, how would you have answered that question?
But that wasn't the question. At least that wasn't the way the voters perceived the question. The question was, knowing what you know now, would you have gone to war or not? And that's the way he should have answered it. And he should have stood up and said, not only no, but hell no.
But if he had said that, Mike, if he had said, and you know, I would not have gone to war, okay, then he would have been accused of being a flip-flopper because he voted for authorization to go to war. You see,
the question is knowing now what you knew then. There were two factors. Number one, he didn't know that we didn't have weapons of mass destruction. Number one. Number two, he didn't know that Bush would misuse the power given him by Congress. And he should have made both of those points. Knowing both of those things now, he would not have voted for authorization.
I'll agree with you. He could have said it better. He definitely could have said it better. But he it still, it would have been a character. I mean, it's a catch-22 kind of question, right? It's, you know, at the beginning, the president demands this authority and saying, if you don't support me, then I'm going to accuse you of being weak and not supporting national security and all this stuff when, you know, there's evidence, all kinds of evidence out there. And then once Kerry votes for authorization, then when the president messes up everything, then he says, aha, would you still? I mean, it's, you understand, it's like, have you stopped beating your wife? It's an impossible question to answer.
And, I disagree. I think he could have turned it to his advantage, and it was a sword pointed at him. He could have turned it around and thrust it right back at the Republicans.
So the response would be hell no.
If
George Bush comes to me, maybe you should have put it this way. If George Bush comes to me again and asks for war authorization, I certainly won't give it to him because I saw how he misused it when I gave it to him the first time.
Well, you can just look at the global consequences. We've spent billions of dollars, thousands of lives. We have disrupted an entire region. We are no safer than we were before. And what have we accomplished, knowing now what we knew then? Absolutely not. I would not have put the country and the world through this mess for so little payoff.
Yeah. Well, I think you said it better. He did say he wouldn't have gone to war in the same way Bush did. He wouldn't have gone without the international support. He wouldn't have gone in without the planning for the post-war. But he's using words that I think you're right. There are more politics.
By agreeing with Bush, he legitimized everything he's now criticizing.
Well, he didn't quite agree with Bush, Mike. There, I disagree with you.
You're saying quite. Again, you're using subtleties and shadings. We're not at a time for subtleties and shadings anymore, Mark. The Republicans certainly don't do it, and they're being damned effective.
Well, you're right. I'm afraid that I definitely agree with you. The Democrats are constantly using subtleties and shadings, and the Republicans are just coming out there, whether it be true or false, and just saying things, and that does tend to resonate with the American people. Thanks very much for your call, Mike.
You're
I appreciate
welcome.
It. We got to go to commercial break. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Have you been talking with your friends and family about this election? And do they care about the nuances? Do they care about the subtleties? Or is it just, well, we're simple. We support the president. Or even we don't support the president. Is it all about code words? My family, some of them, some of the Republican members would, if I started mentioning something, they would just throw out Michael Moore, Monica Lewinsky, as if that would win the argument. Tell me, how do you talk with your family about Iraq, or anything else for that matter, in this election? The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Education, anytime, anywhere, with edanywhere.com. Edanywhere.com provides a middle and high school curriculum that is delivered 24/7 on the Internet for self-paced, independent study. Students and school systems nationwide have been enrolled with a success rate in excess of 85%. It has also been shown to be highly effective for use in alternative school programs, such as summer school, credit recovery, tutorial and remediation, special education, GED, and state standardized test preparation, homebound and homeschool. Earn an accredited high school diploma online. Fully approved, convenient, affordable, and self-paced. Register for classes or set up an appointment or consultation by calling 703-433-0805 or by visiting our website at www.edanywhere.com. Education, anytime, anywhere, with edanywhere.com. Committed to leaving no student behind.
America's best-dressed sandwich can be summed up by one word, Blimpy. And a mouth-watering, overstuffed Blimpy sub is just around the corner at Blimpy's newly remodeled new location on Catoctin Circle at the Amoco Station in Leesburg. Also next to the Government Center in Leesburg and on Sterling Boulevard. Stop by soon and try some delicious new wraps, including the Southwestern with turkey, bacon, and guacamole, the barbecue wrap, chicken Caesar, zesty Italian, beef and cheddar wrap, or the ultimate BLT wrap with capicola, cheddar, and bacon. And what makes a Blimpy sub so delicious? Start with a fresh baked roll, now available in your choice of honey wheat, sesame seed, poppy seed, zesty parmesan, white, and wheat. Stack it high with fresh meats and cheeses fixed to order with lettuce, tomatoes, pickles, peppers, and all your favorites. Plus, get a free 12-ounce coffee on Mondays. Stop by the new Blimpies today on Catoctin Circle in Leesburg. And don't forget the other locations, next to the Government Center in Leesburg and on Sterling Boulevard. Blimpies also has great employment opportunities.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about politics and more specifically how it is that you talk with your family, your friends, your co-workers about politics. There have been lots of comments on my website, and I want to read some of them to you. Regarding my discussion of how we are losing the Cold War again. We are losing Russia again. Russia is going back to dictatorship. This is an issue, by the way, that George Bush is not discussing. He's praising Putin as a man of vision, a man he admires. He says Russia is a country in which democracy and freedom and rule of law thrive. Is what George Bush said, trying to get Russia to help us in the war against terrorism. Got a comment here from Rick. Rick writes, I think the Republicans want the end of a free Russia. They want another Cold War, then they can have another Red Scare. Joe McCarthy is just waiting to crawl out of his grave. I do want to praise Colin Powell for taking a tiny step, really to understate the obvious. Colin Powell said Russia is, quote, pulling back on some of the democratic reforms, unquote. That's the best we could get from the Bush administration. Other unnamed White House officials are telling the New York Times that Mr. Putin's abolition of elections, ending elections for governors throughout Russia, was, quote, a domestic matter for the Russian people, unquote. Really, ending democracy in Russia is a domestic matter for the Russian people? You have Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld saying, with regard to Mr. Putin's war against Chechnya, that the civilized world has to stay on the offensive. That's exactly what he's doing. Vice President Cheney seconded that. Let's compare it to what John Kerry has said. Again, just because the press doesn't report it doesn't mean John Kerry hasn't said it. Let's talk about what he said about Russia. He said, quote, I remain deeply concerned about President Putin's ongoing moves to limit democratic freedoms and further centralize power. Russia will be a much more effective partner in the war on terror if its government is transparent, open to criticism, respectful of the rule of law, and protects the human rights of its citizens, including those in Chechnya. Simply looking the other way, as the Bush administration has done, is not in the national security interest of the United States or Russia. So, if you want to know who's taking a real stand on democracy, again, just look at the two candidates. Skip writes that he thinks Orwell had it right when he said the war is not meant to be won, it is meant to be perpetuated. Donna Marie writes in detail about how to deal with family and friends and co-workers, and I think she has some interesting insights. She sent me two comments, and I want to read them at length because I think they're quite useful. Donna's from Chicago. Donna writes, tuned in because this is my big question too. The more I thought about it, the more I think you won't find a rational answer to your question because there just isn't one. Donna writes, despite how we like to see ourselves, we are not really rational creatures. Why don't people respond to facts? Because people aren't driven by facts. The Republicans know this, and as I said before, the Dems keep trying to argue issues and points and facts. Don't you get it? The Republicans haven't argued facts in 30 years. They run on fear and hate and greed. And most effectively, they've run on deep-seated racism and xenophobia. Xenophobia, of course, is fear of foreigners. They, the Republicans, have effectively appealed to our collective dark side that we have never, ever been forced to face and excise. They make virtues of our worst instincts and have skillfully swathed it in all in light and morality and thrown over the whole vile mess and intellectual gloss that's only skin deep. That was Donna Marie's original post to me. And then she came back with a second post, which I thought was actually even more interesting than her first. She writes, Mark, okay, my last answer is too easy. How do you respond to people? In kind. Not with facts, but with empathy and understanding. You have to understand what a momentous battle in the mind is involved in a cognitive shift of this magnitude. You have to understand that this isn't a battle of facts, but almost of light and darkness, of truth itself against the dark lie. I was recently in the position of defending, Donna Maria writes, defending a middle-aged Republican man who found himself in the midst of a group of hostile progressives. Why? Because without this space, if he were to only feel attack from the left, how would he ever find the courage to change? What did my stance buy me? A real heartfelt conversation that maybe moved him forward one small inch. How do you change people? You have to help them move beyond their narrow self-interests. It's a question of whether you're willing to love someone enough to do more than just talk about facts. Because if it's really about the Republic, the evil with which the Republicans are infecting individual souls. And then I did get a email from one of my cousins. I won't say her name because we'll keep cousins out of it unless I know that I can say her name. But this cousin of mine writes, Mark, your question is, how do you talk politics with family? My answer is, you listen to each other and not judge. I don't have a career in politics, and I'm not paid to dig for information. I rely on the media and my gut. My gut is not sure yet which way to vote yet, and I appreciate you giving me the inside scoop. But you, meaning me, Mark, you support your party, and you don't want to see any positives in the current administration. I am more comfortable with George Bush than I would have been with Al Gore, and if you want me to vote for Kerry, you need to sell me that he will secure this country. The whole world is crazy, and I want to feel safe. Based on that, who should I vote for? I think that's a great question, and I think you should have someone who will make you feel safe. And it seems to me that at the end of the day, you would want a president who doesn't just say, this is my policy, I'm sticking with it, I don't care what happens. You know, we're going to go there, and we're there in Iraq, we're going to stay forever. Frankly, that was the problem in Vietnam. We sent people there, and they didn't want to back down. I think, I say to my cousin, that the true test of a president should be a president who can recognize a failing policy and have the ability to actually change course and lead our nation out of a situation that's a mistake. We are now deeply involved in a region that we don't understand, that certainly Bush doesn't understand, and we've unleashed forces beyond our control. Saddam Hussein was a relatively stable dictatorship. And now we are seeing that Al-Qaeda is coming in there, into Iraq for the first time. We see basically Bush not taking the advice of his own generals. When we had four contractors go into Fallujah where they weren't allowed to go and get killed, our military said, you know what, they weren't supposed to be there, don't punish them. But Bush said, no, we've got to punish them. All right, I respect that judgment. He rejected his military. He went in there with full force into Fallujah to punish the individuals that killed the four American contractors. But then, when they got outside Fallujah and the people were holed up, then Bush decided to back down, to let the terrorists win, to let them keep control of Fallujah. And again, the same Marine commander that told Bush, I wouldn't go after these people in Fallujah because that'll just rile people up, make them angry, and the four contractors weren't supposed to be there anyway, said, once you make a decision, all right, you've got to finish at least with that decision. You have to go in and conquer Fallujah because that's what you said you would do. We find that Bush is indeed flip-flopping. He's indeed vacillating in the war on terror. And he's vacillating in tactics, not strategy. In other words, if you take a tactic, you're going to take a village, then go and take that village. But the overall strategy is something that should be reconsidered time and time again. And I would trust a president that actually is willing to ask hard questions. Someone who challenges AIDS. People come to him and say, well, you know, there's evidence of weapons of mass destruction. There's evidence against. And he says, well, find out which is true. Give me more facts. A president that doesn't just sit there and go on vacation when he's told that bin Laden is determined to attack the United States. A president that doesn't come before the American people and says, as George Bush did, quote, there is no doubt, intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraq regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised. Bush said there was no doubt when he knew there was doubt. There was substantial doubt. So I want a president that doesn't lie to us, and I think we can most be safe by having a president that respects democracy, not just where he can install it, and I don't think he's succeeding, but in places like Russia, in places like Saudi Arabia. And I have to say, I think John Kerry is that president. So I would say if you're looking for safety, look for a president who's willing to understand the nuances and not just continue in a simplistic fashion. Thank you very much for all your calls and comments. This is Mark Levine signing off. We'll just work with one more quote from John Kerry that's one of my favorites. Don't love your country, right or wrong. Love your country when it's right, and when it's wrong, put it right. This is Mark Levine signing off.
I can't really describe. what it's like to lose three children.
Put it right. This is Mark Levine signing off.
I can't really describe what it's like to lose.